Please be seated. Good morning. We have today two hearings. We have one on 0607, electronic signatures, and 0608, electronic filing. We then will come out and open court administrative session and discuss and hopefully decide those two rules petitions. We are then going to discuss the procedure about state legislative redistricting. That is not a public hearing. That is a discussion of the court to see what it should do with the report. I'm hoping we are going to get to In re discretionary transfer of civil cases to tribal courts. In light of the fact that yesterday, I totally misgauged the amount of time that it took on the first matter, which I thought would be finished by noon. It was finished closer to 5. And we had our courtrooms here of people waiting. So this is an alert to everybody who is sitting here. For those who were from Madison, and unfortunately many were not from Madison yesterday, you're here for other matters than 0607 and 0608. It may be that if it looks as if it's going late, that you give us your telephone numbers and we can call you so you do not sit here till 5 or close to it. And that goes for anyone in the room, although if the calls become too numerous, I'll have to change that suggestion too. All right, in light of what I have just said, we're going to move to discuss 0607, which is electronic signatures. The presenter is Judge Pack of Racine County, and he has slept all night here in the courtroom.
Under the table.
Under the table, having.
The suit looks pretty good, but the wrinkles are.
Having been here for the marathon, what do you have to say today?
Good morning.
Judge.
Chief Justice Abramson and Justices of the Court. I am, again, Gerald Patak. I'm a judge in Racine County, and I am the chairman of the Electronic Filing Committee, which was created by the Director's Office, in order to move forward with electronic filing in the circuit courts. This is really the next step beyond the pilot programs that you allowed us to go forward with back in 2005, and now we're taking it to the next level, which is basically to move forward in other case types and in earnest to create electronic filing. I'm going to be talking about both petitions simultaneously, if I have your permission, since they are so interrelated, and the signature issue really relates to the electronic filing system.
Let me just interrupt you there. We have no appearances on 0607 scheduled. Is there anyone here who wants to appear on the electronic signature? Okay.
All right.
So we're going to deal with that, and you deal with electronic signatures of attorneys in 0608.
Correct.
Got it.
And court officials.
Right. Right. Go ahead.
So what the committee is asking is for you to approve the court rules which are before you, which would allow electronic filing in the circuit court system, and deal with the application of electronic signatures by those participating, lawyers, pro se litigants, users, and court officials. This rule will allow for a procedure to be used between litigants and the courts for the exchange of electronic documents. I think I want to start by talking about security, since that always seems to be an issue that comes up when we talk about computers these days. And as you will note from reading the language in the introductory portion before the rule proper, we rely on the security that's provided to us by the CCAP system. And basically, CCAP will guarantee the authenticity and the integrity of the electronically filed documents by the use of digital signature technology. Documents will be stored in a secure database, and registered users will view documents through the e-filing website, and will have viewing rights only for cases that they are attorney or a party to at this point. Just so it's clear at the outset, we, at this point, because of policy concerns and other issues, are not asking that documents filed electronically be available on the CCAP website or to the general public. I want to also talk about where we are now with respect to the use of computers and electronic business, e-business, in the courts. In the circuit courts, we do a lot of transactions by using the computer and partnering with other agencies. As examples, the courts send tax warrants for unemployment compensation to the system, from the courts to the agency involved. Criminal complaints based upon DA's offices in our counties, which use the PROTECT system, are electronically transmitted to the courts via the computer process and not by paper, allowing us to populate the case management system with data that's created by them rather than having a clerk, again, enter the data from the paper document.
What about traffic citations?
That's another valid use of it. The State Patrol piloted this area throughout the state, and primarily beginning with the scales around the state where they issue citations, and also now in their squad cars, they use an electronic citation process where, again, they send citations, not by paper, but by electronic means to the courts, and then files are created that way. Judgments of conviction are sent to the Department of Justice in criminal matters for their record keeping, rather than some of you might be familiar with that old fingerprint card that you would see floating around in files that everyone had to sign off on. It would go through the DA's process, the court's process, and then be mailed in. It's now done electronically. Pro se forms are done in electronic filing format for pro se litigants in small claims cases and in the family court area. So we are, again, not breaking ground here in many ways because we are already using the electronic process in many ways in our current system. I also want to say that as we went through this process to create these rules, you know, as a lawyer and someone who's practiced law and someone who is a judge, and seeing and understanding the paper process, I guess in my mind, in terms of trying to bridge this gap from going to a paper process to a paperless process, we made an effort in the committee's work to adhere to what the existing procedures and obviously the law is, and so that we basically have not changed anything with respect to the procedures and the law that requires certain things to be done. We've simply changed the means by which it's done. In other words, if I have something that I'm as a judge or a lawyer required to sign, we traditionally think about taking this piece of paper and a pen and putting pen to paper. I guess in my mind, what I tried to do is envision this process continuing as it is identically, except now, as a lawyer or judge, I'm putting fingers to a keyboard.
Judge, let me, if I might, interrupt you at the point that gives me the greatest concern. We got a memo from the clerk of the Supreme Court in the Court of Appeals, Mr. Shanker. And in one of the first paragraphs of his memo, he talks about, this is in regard to the electronic signatures by court officials. He talks about it as, in essence, the petition authorizes the electronic version of a signature stamp. Now, when I was a new young judge, and without getting into a lot of detail, about 30 years ago, literally, I saw tremendous abuse of a signature stamp of a judge. How are safeguards built in that will not allow abuse? How are we going to be sure that if something is electronically signed, it's done by a judge and the judge that is supposed to be signing?
As you would be the keeper of your electronic signature, so would I as a judge. And I would have the responsibility to make sure it was used appropriately, just as I do with my hand writing my signature on a piece of paper. Again, nothing changes except it's done by a different means. Well, so that if a judge were to allow his or her signature to be used by stamp, they may still do that by giving authorization under certain circumstances to staff to do that. There are certain acts which I think we may agree could be done by someone at the direction of a judge. On the other hand, there are those which are the ones you're referring to, which cannot be. And again, nothing changes here other than the means by which it's done.
Is there any record made if someone authorizes somebody else to electronically sign for him or her? Is there any record kept of that?
There could be, yes.
Is there in the proposal?
Well, maybe Gene can answer the technical questions. Gene, would you come to the table?
I have Gene Bosquet here, who is the director of CCAP and so on. You know her.
Marcia, are you needed at the table, too?
No, actually, the CCAP case management system has an audit report that's built into it. So every change, addition, or deletion that's done in any of the CCAP databases is captured in a transaction log, is what we call it. And that tells us who placed an electronic signature on a document. So we could tell if you did that or if you had delegated that authority to a different user. We would know that.
And you'd know whether or not that user was the one who had signed the document.
Correct.
So if I delegated to David Schenker as clerk of the Supreme Court authority to have me sign an order for the court, it would show that he did it rather than I did it.
It would be electronically signed by you,
right,
but the transaction report would show that David Schenker did the actual electronic signature.
Well, if I could follow that up, is that by virtue of whose computer is being used?
Nope, it's from username, password, and user security system in the case management system.
You're just guaranteeing to us that the system is set up to show that whoever put the electronic signature on can be detected by the computer, and that information can be retrieved.
Correct.
So actually, there are more safeguards than if you just have signature stamps that can be used.
Right.
Because you don't know who put the stamp on.
I'm not sure I understand. In the hypothetical that the chief used, does Mr. Schenker have a special PIN?
No, he does not. This is for the Circuit Court case management system. And in the Circuit Court case management system, you have a username and password. And then for the electronic signature, the judge could choose to delegate that authority to someone. If he did that, anytime the other person signed a document for him, we would know that username was the person who did the signature instead of that particular judge.
And how would you know that?
We keep that information in the computer database. It's part of our security, so we know who's adding, changing, or deleting records in a database.
It's the same application that applies to what happens at the clerk's level now. I had a recent incident where I had some questions about who had done something. It was an entry that didn't make sense in a case, and we were able to have the CCAP people go back for us and tell us from their data here in Madison who had and what computer had been used to enter that event in the case management of a particular case.
And that, in part, is because you have to log in. And so before I can do anything on the computer, I have to log in with my personal identifier, like my PIN number or something like that.
Right.
And then that's what tells you in who actually affixed the signature, because you can't do it unless you log in and you have it.
Right.
Your number. Is there any safeguard in regard to someone somehow learning the code to key in a signature who wasn't delegated? In other words, if I wanted to use your signature, Judge, and you didn't delegate it to me and I did it, is there any way that it would refuse my effort to do that?
Well, there's one added level of security with respect to signatures, and that is user login ID, mm-hmm. login, password, et cetera, and then PIN number is required by the system to get to the signature, all right? So there is that added level of security, in part because, for example, the state bar number, which we all have as lawyers, is in the public domain, and it's not a secure number. So that to address your issue, to make sure the signature is, in fact, my signature, not only do we use bar numbers, judge numbers, but we use a PIN as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, let me try once more. I'm a slow learner here. This is the judge's computer. This is, say, a clerk's computer or some other person's computer. If you're using this computer with a judge and there's a certain login or PIN or whatever you say, suppose the person who normally operates this computer is at this computer and using all those identification numbers. How do you know it is the judge doing this and not the person who's normally at that computer?
You don't know. That is the point where you don't know. And that's where you rely on the integrity of the people and the process. Again, thinking in the paper world, if some signature is applied fraudulently, how would that be handled? And that same thing would occur here, where someone, rather than signing the paper, had sat down at the keyboard and done that. The security that's built into our system is that within 5 minutes of my stepping away from my computer, the system has security that locks it up, basically, and I have to log back in. So it shouldn't be a circumstance where someone is doing it unknowingly because of the security that's in place. I would know generally if someone's going to sit down on my computer and do work, and I would have given them authorization. But then if I do that and am not authorized to do that by law, then I, as the judge, bear the brunt of having, you know, not followed the law.
So you're relying on the judges to adhere to our rules about shutdown of the computer.
That's
and
correct.
Not disengage or disable or do anything like that. And the whole point of disabling the computer within, and I've forgotten how many minutes you've given each of us, is so that the computer is secure. Somebody cannot walk into the office and either see what's in your computer or make use of the computer and send an email to everybody in the system, for example.
Correct.
That should never have been sent. Or sign papers that are on your desk.
Right. So I want to point out...
Maybe you better stay there, Ms. Bouquet.
I want to point out what the changes are that are necessitated by going from this paper process to an electronic filing process. The obvious change is that things are being done electronically in terms of filing and service of documents. Documents are filed on other registered users through the use of the electronic filing system, unless, of course, there's some requirement in law that there be personal service as that's defined. So that, again,
so
filing is done. I'm sorry.
A motion, for example, can be filed served electronically, but probably not the original summons and complaint.
And again, this is a voluntary process, so that if I, as the initiating party, choose to do this electronically, other parties in the case also have to choose to be electronic filers. And they would do that through the software and the website. And if they choose not to be, then I still have to comply with the law and file and serve them in the traditional manner. Another change that obviously occurs here is electronic record keeping, so that we don't have, in the ideal world here, in a truly electronic file, necessarily a paper file with paper records. The clerk keeps an electronic record, not paper.
Counsel?
Yes.
I mean, counsel. Your honorable judge. Detailed question. Some in the lawsuit do it electronically, some do it by paper. When those that do it by paper, if it started electronically, those that do it by paper, the paper is scanned in. In other words, the answer that's done by paper is scanned in, and you have electronic. What happens to that paper? How does it relate to our retention rules?
The retention rules stay the same, except that it's applied to the electronic record.
And so what happens to that paper?
The paper is retained by the lawyer. if they wish to retain it. We tried not to dictate how lawyers run their office. If they wish to have a paperless file, they may do so as well. They retain it. On the other hand, if they, for example, an originating document, if they were to destroy it and not keep it in their file, and if there ever becomes an issue that relates to the authenticity of a signature or something like that that's on that document, you know, they may want to, but it's at their option whether they retain it or not. And
Justice Bradley is asking you, what does the clerk do with that paper? It's scanned in.
Scanned in. The clerk does not keep paper.
Returns it to the attorney.
Destroys it. There's no need to.
Oh, destroys it.
They file a copy. All right? In our system, they file a copy, retain the original, if they wish.
Okay. So what we're left with, if one party asks for e-filing, the other party doesn't, but then the clerk's office will scan it, and each of them has a scanner.
Correct.
Now the case is finished. It's nowhere to be found anywhere except in Space World.
It exists in the computer. It's there in data that's retained, as are all CCAP records now. Mm-hmm. It's accessible. It remains accessible to all parties in the case. They can get on a computer if they're electronic filers and partners to the case and view it.
You at least have a manila folder like this that says, this was a filed case, see Space World.
If the clerk wishes to, they may. They wouldn't have to.
But if not, you just have to get back on the computer, and I suppose there are backups
right.
So that...
Let me just say, maybe the answer to your question is this. In the real world today, if a clerk gets a call on the telephone and asks about a case, the first thing they're doing at their desk with that information is they're getting on the computer. So they're not running to a file room to look for a hard copy of the file to see what it says. They're looking on their computer. So in the real business world, it is electronic data that they rely on to deal with the public. Mm-hmm. So if you were to call and ask about a case today, that's where they would get the information from. And if you want more detail than is in the current case management system, then they get up out of their chair and they go to the file room to get the file, to get the answer. Okay?
How many states are currently using electronic filing or in the midst of a pilot project? When this petition was filed, I think it was 26 states. Is that still the same number that you are familiar with?
I don't have any other numbers than those you refer to.
And with regard to the federal courts, nearly all federal district courts and bankruptcy courts are now on electronic filing.
I think that may be the case, yes.
Is that true for the eastern and western districts of Wisconsin?
I know that the eastern district is farther ahead than the western, as I know from my conversations with people in that practice. So other changes that come as a result of this process include the use of electronic signatures. This would be done by pro se parties, attorneys, and by court officials. And basically, again, as I pointed out, this is not an issue of putting pen to paper, but it is an issue of putting fingers to the keyboard. Now, I wanted to point out there with respect to cases that you have decided about signatures. This is really one of the areas that, you know, you need to consider here, and that is you've made decisions that say pen to paper is just an administrative part of this, but there's more to it than when a judge or a lawyer signs a document, and that is the lawyer is vouching for compliance with legal requirements, that it's a valid claim that's being filed, it's not a fraudulent claim, all those things come into play. But when you think about it, those things are still on the table here with an electronic signature because those things, those requirements that you've set forth in case law with respect to the electronic signature still apply. In other words, I'm not putting my pen to paper anymore. I'm putting my fingers to the keyboard, but I'm still responsible for the veracity, the validity, the legality of the document that's being filed. All right? So those don't go away under this process. Also, the system provides for electronic notarization. Again, this is working with cooperation of the Secretary of State's office, where we would receive from them into the system a list of legally qualified notaries and the term of their commission. Then they would log on to the system, identify themselves by user ID and password, receive a PIN, and then be able to apply their notarization to documents. Now, let me explain to you how this would work in the real world. If I am a lawyer and I'm filing an affidavit or something of that nature which needs to be notarized, I'm in my office at the computer, and I'm using my my ID, user ID, password to log in. I'm then using my PIN to apply the signature to the document. And if I have to raise my right hand and swear, I'm sitting at my desk, at my keyboard, and standing over my shoulder is the notary. And they administer the oath and witness my signature. I get up out of my chair. The notary sits down on the same computer, enters their user ID password, their PIN, and then applies the notary seal. So again, it's done the same way, but rather than me and the notary putting pen to paper, we're putting fingers to the keyboard.
Would you, under that system, have the person sign the affidavit in Dodgeville and you notarize it in Madison?
I don't believe so because of what the legal requirements are for notarization.
Right. So you have
presence.
To, they have to be in your presence.
Right.
You could authenticate their signature, however.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. Okay. The last change that this rule brings is perhaps not as significant, but we're trying to manage data and also deal with sometimes documents that are filed that are confidential. So such obvious things as in a divorce action, a financial disclosure statement. Other circumstances might arise, and you think about the paper world now, and if an attorney files a civil case, for example, and the pleadings might contain information that they might consider to be a trade secret, what they'll do now is they'll come and file the documents with permission of the court to seal it or keep it confidential within the terms of the litigation. We're trying to figure out some way to make sure that we don't get this in the system and it's, you know, there and available. So we've allowed attorneys the responsibility and really removed it from the clerk's office, which does it now under those obvious statutory ones, to give it to the attorneys to be able to basically check a box and say this is to be treated confidential. This is obviously, if it comports with law, that's not an issue because it's required if it's a confidential matter such as a financial disclosure statement. And if it's a matter that's in controversy, then obviously it would be protected until that issue in controversy could be heard and decided by the court. Does it really need to be protected? Is there a reason to do that, et cetera? So we've transferred the responsibility of confidential information in the system from the clerk, basically, to the lawyers.
I'm sorry, Judge. again, let me return to those thrilling days of yesteryear when I would go to a file. Let's say as an attorney, I wanted to know about, oh, yeah, that case about 4 years ago. My bottom line question is, how does someone access a case electronically if that person is not a party to the action?
The access would be by, as it is now, going to the courthouse, but rather than having the clerk and go and pull the file off the shelf and hand it to you, they would take you to the public access terminal, and you would get access to the case through the computer. That's a public access terminal in the courthouse.
What about your own computer at
Again,
the office?
At this point, because of policy considerations, we have not approached that. We have had a working committee, the WCCA Access Committee. I think that we didn't want to overstep our bounds and deal with the public policy issues at this point in terms of just making it available to anyone to view via the Internet, okay?
So there's a public access computer, unlike the computer in your office, that would allow you to view the summons and complaint in a case filed several years ago that was filed
That's correct.
Electronically.
Right.
But your computer in your office will tell you about the case. So if you put in Jane Smith,
right.
You'll get that. You'll get the case number.
Right. You will still get all the case management information
right.
That's in any CCAP
exactly.
case.
Right.
Right.
Just like you do now.
Correct.
It's just like you do now. You don't get the actual documents to read them.
Yes.
For that, under this petition, you have to go get the
right.
public access right. terminal.
And again, that obviously is a part of the future, but it's not our starting point.
So you spoke about trade secrets. And you said that those could be confidential and that people cannot use the CCAP system to get to these documents. Only the parties can do that. Can the parties get access to the trade secrets that are filed, both sides or just one side?
I guess it would depend on the nature of the information, trade secrets, social security numbers, those are the sorts of things that would be confidential. And it would be as it is now in any litigation. If, in fact, one party has information that they want to have filed but to be secret or confidential, the court could order that. So our goal is not to change anything, but to simply allow a mechanism for it to occur in the electronic world as it does now in the paper world, all right? And again, in the paper world, if an attorney wishes to seal a document or wants something treated confidentially, they bring a motion to the court, and the court can, as it's being filed, review it and sign the order sealing it. This doesn't happen in the paper, in the electronic world, because the data is in there available to any person who's an electronic user. Thus, we allow the person who's filing that information, who wants it to be treated confidential, to check a box to seal it, and then it is, until such time as it's an issue that's dealt with by the court.
So if the other party doesn't like the label confidentiality, you go into the court.
Exactly.
First you file a motion electronically.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
And get a hearing date, et cetera, and then you go into court and say, open it up or close more.
Yes.
Then the court makes a ruling.
Right.
Stamped by the clerk who has my signature, right?
Yes.
And then you'll either redact somehow on the computer or not redact appropriately.
Right. Remove the seal if it's public or to be available to all parties.
Who monitors that? Sometimes in cases, parties may want a settlement to be confidential, but as a judge, I wouldn't approve the sealing of it. Who monitors the party's agreement that something is confidential?
I guess it would be the responsibility of the court, as it is now.
But the court doesn't necessarily know it, does it?
It should, because okay. If the court's reviewing the documents, as you saw in the demonstration, they come on an email listing, and you go through the list of documents to be reviewed, and you know it. You should know it.
But you may not know it, but usually you need the court. The court's going to dismiss, right?
Right.
And if the court's going to dismiss on stipulation of the parties, and it's all sealed, then it's up to the court to say aye or nay, like right. They do now. Isn't that the point? But if the parties just dismiss without telling the court anything other than dismissal, there are rules as to whether you need the court's approval.
And in my experience as a judge, and those sorts, this is a little off target, but those sorts of circumstances where parties generally want an agreement not to be of concern to be made public, and they want to keep it secret, they keep it between themselves. They don't file it with the court. They simply file the motion for dismissal.
Dismiss.
Right.
And that's
exactly.
It.
Right.
I've forgotten what happens at the trial court because it's different up here. Up here, at a certain level, the dismissal is automatically granted. At another level, it needs this court's approval. Can people dismiss out without circuit court approval?
Yes.
Okay. So you just don't show it.
The court still signs an order, obviously.
Right.
But
it doesn't refer to a stipulation, doesn't refer to confidentiality.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
Just like now.
Yes.
Except in minor settlements.
Minor court settlements, yes.
Right.
So, I'm sorry.
I have one more question here. If I am counsel for one side and I file confidential material, should I be able to get the confidential material from my computer?
Yes.
All right. But opposing counsel cannot get it.
Correct.
Okay. Now, if people go to the courthouse and that public access computer, they will not be able to get it either.
Correct.
So there's going to be multiple different programs or whatever multiple different ways or levels of access to information in each case or potentially in each case.
Yes. And on that issue.
Just as it is now with the paper.
Correct.
Now, Suppose Justice Bradley files this confidential data, and it is, I'm on the other side, and I can't get that. There's no way I can hire maybe ex-employees of CCAP to hack into the system? I mean, it's big money in this.
Well, I hope you won't do that. I'd be subject to penalties.
I wouldn't do it. So on. Hands are clean, but I mean, is this free from? Is this invulnerable to hackers?
My only answer to that is that in Racine County, we've been on the system since 1992, 16 years. I've been on the CCAP steering committee since 1991. I've not heard of any successful attempt to alter or to hack into the system, if you will. So I guess I would rely on the reputation of the system and the security that's in place with respect to not allowing people who have, you know, ill-intended thoughts into the system.
I suppose you could hire a former employee of a clerk's office who knows the system, who pays a visit at an appropriate time, greets everybody, and knows the customs of the office and can go to the file and
find
confidential.
Right, but they're still not going to get into the system without an active, valid user ID password.
No, but if it was in paper,
yes,
you could get a trespasser.
Yes.
If I could follow up.
Like a janitor.
Wait, I'm sorry.
No, you could have a janitor who cleans the office at night, and this is what you're going to look for.
Well, computers are off, I hope, unlocked.
No, but if it was a paper record, file, then you just do that. I'm trying to analogize every problem that we have with electronics into paper, because my sense is that's what you tried to do.
Correct.
So I'm just saying, if you want to steal confidential information, if it's in paper, you can find a way to hack the office.
Well, if I could follow up Justice Prosser's question, because I share the concerns that his question calls into play, and particularly with the concept, as I understand it, that at least with respect to the electronic filing documents, the contemplation is a paperless system. In fact, as I understand it, any paper copies that are scanned or made can be destroyed by the clerk. I recall when I was the presiding judge of the Milwaukee Municipal Court System, our system had, and I don't remember if the number of backup systems was 7, 8, or 9 different servers that backed up the system along the way, just to make sure if anything crashed, we would have supportive documents. And I recall one instance where the entire system just about crashed, and 8 of the 9 servers went down. If the 9th server had gone down, the only records that would have remained would have been the paper records that the court maintained at the court. When I utilized that example in conjunction with the hackers type concern, if someone were to be able to find a way to hack into the system, if the only documents that you have are the paperless documents that are in the system, and you don't have a way of cross-referencing or cross-checking those documents by having a file document on file, then in fact your records could be compromised. Now, I understand that CCAP does a wonderful job with security, and I understand that there's constant battles every single day to update security systems to ensure that hackers cannot get in and compromise our computerized systems. But I also understand that every day you have people out there trying to cause mischief, and that it's a multi-billion dollar industry just to try to protect computer systems. So if this is all at play, while I understand the concerns about trying to simplify the filing and trying to make the job easier for attorneys and try to reduce the paper files that we have in play, I'm not sure that we're not creating other problems by completely getting rid of a paperless system that could act as a backup in case either mischief or other electronic concerns do come into play.
Let me just explain the difference, and I'll have Jean address this because she knows more about the security that CCAP provides than I do. If the courthouse were to burn down today, your paper file would be gone. On the other hand,
but you would have the electronic document.
Let me finish. But if you have entered the data in the computer system and you lose your mainframe at the courthouse, there is backup of data at CCAP that would allow me to duplicate the computer system. Okay? So let me
Before you pass it on, Judge Patak, that was exactly the system we had at the municipal court system, where we had 9 different servers located in different parts of the world, and 8 of them went down. That's exactly what we had in place. And my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Gene, is that we don't have 9 servers with respect to CCAP.
We actually have a database server and a document management server, which is what stores your electronic documents in every one of the circuit courts in every county. We have a backup server in that county that also stores that data in the county. And then we back everything back to Madison and store it on 4 different central repository servers, 2 in the Tenney building and 2 in the Department of Justice's server room. So we're in 2 different spots in Madison where we also keep complete copies of all the data. So we have 6 different full backup systems that are in place. And what we've been able to do with those is we've had counties go down, and before it would take us a day or a day and a half to rebuild a server and get all the backup data back on them, we can run them from Madison within an hour or two when they go down. So we've got really good success as far as having our data, keeping our data secure, and being able to get people back up and running if something happens to a production server.
Well, you had a slight flooding problem in Madison within the last, 6 months? When records were water damaged, mm-hmm. and potentially computer records, how was that handled?
They did have water damage over in the Justice Center for Dane County, and that was, we had some equipment that was destroyed, but none of the computer records were. We needed to replace some calendar kiosks, public access monitors, and things like that. But for the most part, it didn't affect the CCAP system.
But what about when Milwaukee went down?
When Milwaukee went down is
I hate to bring up a
I thought that's what you were going to bring up is when CCAP went down. I may as well do it now. Yeah. We've had a system go down on us. And what happened was we were on an older backup technology, which was tape backups. We had a local person checking them for us, and they never noticed that it wasn't completing. So we didn't have a complete full backup for some time. We needed to restore it at one point when our database corrupted, and we needed to basically bring several months worth of data back together kind of in a piecemeal fashion. The good news was we were able to do it. We had to hire outside consulting help to do that, but we were able to rebuild their entire database with 2 months of data that we were missing some portions of it because of the corruption.
Without looking at the paper records?
Correct.
You did it through electronically rather than a comparison.
We would have transaction details for financial records, but not the headers, and we would have to rebuild portions of that. We also had our WCCA website, which we used to rebuild the data to. And that's why we do now have 4 backups in Madison in 2 different places because of what happened in Milwaukee.
Thank you. And Justice Butler, anything else?
My only concern, and it's been a concern since we've gone to computerized records and this pilot project and now the proposal is before the court, is that we protect the integrity of the system, that we have as many backups as possible. And while I'm less concerned about going to an electronic filing system, I think that's the wave of the future. I think that's where all courts are going to be going. The concept of destroying paper backup files disturbs me, and it deeply disturbs me. And it disturbs me on multiple fronts. One is a pragmatic record matter, just as a judge being able to pick up a file and go and read some documents at different locations as opposed to hauling a computer around everywhere. And if you don't have it, then you're going to have somebody go out and print it every time you want it to read it, or you're going to have to print it yourself. Just in terms of having an original document somewhere to verify in case there is any problem in the future with hacking or with corruption of the system, just to be able to go back and look and, well, we have an original document and we can match it up and we can compare it and we do see changes. That are there. I mean, there's just a lot of different things that concern me about completely going paperless. And while I understand that it makes perfect sense to allow for electronic filing, I, having gone through that experience in Milwaukee, and I didn't go through, I wasn't as worried about the circuit court experience, because I understand CCAP was able to do that. But I do understand that the municipal court system was almost down completely. And if we didn't have paper backups, our system, all of our records would have been lost. And that's the concern that I bring to the table. If it's just something to be said about, you know, double and triple checking everything.
Anna, we share your concern, obviously. The last couple of things I wanted to talk to you about was how we would implement this system if you were to approve on the petition. CCAP would go forward once the rule is approved in three case types, basically, civil, small claims, and family, and would look to counties to opt in to the electronic filing system in those areas. The question about who would use it is obviously something that's going to progress with time. This isn't a circumstance where we're going to pick a date in the future and throw a switch, and we'll be doing electronic filing and that'll be our solution. It'll happen gradually. I think I know that from my experience in my community that lawyers who are practicing lawyers and who have filed and participated in litigation in the federal courts who are accustomed with e-filing are probably people who are going to want to use it. Judges, perhaps. I think based on our pilot program, judges perhaps not as much as we would like will be willing to use it, but I think as you will probably understand from your complement of seven, there are varying levels of understanding of information systems and computers. There's varying levels of comfort, and that applies to us as well. I think there are judges who will be at it the first day it's available and be using it, and there are judges who will probably not turn on their computer and want the clerk to give them that paper file, which the clerk can do. Okay? So it'll be a gradual process. I guess what I'm suggesting to you, as you might know from your own life experience, this is somewhat generational. And as I view this, in part, we're getting started here for the next generation of lawyers and judges and so on, because they are the people who in their lives today don't use paper. They live with a computer by text messaging on their phones and so on, and they are the ones who are going to have the comfort level and the experience that is going to really make this a fly.
Say that each county can opt in. Who does it for the county?
Who opts in? The clerk of courts and the judges, yes.
So they would decide.
Right.
If there's a conflict, then what?
Well,
you work it out.
Correct.
Okay. So even if a lawyer wants to do it in County Z, but the county has decided not to opt in yet,
right.
Can't do it.
Correct.
Okay.
Funding of this process, as you know from the budget process, the governor chose not to include our request for an added sum of money to fund this. Thus, we are not able to do what is referred to as XML, extensive markup language level programming. What that would mean is that complaint that you may have seen in the demonstration that you think about, rather than being just simply a PDF document, would be in fact a document that would be a smart document. If we used XML to do this, you would be able to search the entire complaint and all its makeup. With what we're doing now, you're attaching a PDF document to what we're referring to as a transmittal page. The transmittal page is, in fact, a smart document. All the information on that document is known to the computer and can be used in that way. However, the complaint is just that. It's a complaint, and the computer knows a complaint's attached, but it doesn't know and can't tell you what's in the content of it, or other than perhaps the type of case that's been filed, the type of action that's been filed, based upon the number that's applied to the filing.
So if you were looking to see if the complaint stated punitive damages, you can't do that with a search under PDF,
correct.
But you can under XML.
You could, you're right. Right.
And I had asked several of you questions when we were watching the film this morning. Can we move easily from PDF to XML if and when you want to?
The answer is
tedious.
The answer is yes, and the answer is we're really already partly there. And that's come to us through the pro se projects that we have initiated through CCAP and the director's office. The family court forms are all available online to any person in the state who wants to use them to file. And those are, in fact, XML-based documents and are searchable, as are the small claims documents, which I think are nearly ready to be put in the public domain for pro se users. So as we do more of that, we will then get gradually to having smart documents, what we're referring to, I guess, at one point as the Cadillac versus the Chevy version of e-filing.
Could I ask some very basic questions? Your Honor, you are an insurance company or a large financial institution, and I'm not. You're suing me. You can file with the court electronically. How do you get the documents to me, because I'm not computer literate at all? Don't even have a computer.
Then I would serve you in the traditional means.
Okay.
By paper.
Okay. If I did have a computer, it's perfectly all right to serve via computer?
If you receive a notice and agree to be a participant as an electronic filer in the case. If you do not, then traditional means are used.
Unless personal service is required. Like if
exactly.
Someone's a computer.
Yes, yes.
So regardless whether you're big or little, with or without a computer, personal service is required still. Paper.
Okay. And then to answer your complaint, I can type something up or get my attorney to type something up and take it to the courthouse, and then it will be scanned into the system.
Correct.
Can you handwrite it and scan it?
Yes. Well, and the rule does provide for some documents can't be scanned well for various reasons.
Too big, too much.
Not the right colored paper. We had that experience in our county where we had some paper we were using that didn't allow for the data on or the information on it to be scanned in. So if it can't be scanned, then it has to be retained in hard copy.
And that's provided for here.
Yes, it is. The last thing I was going to talk about were signatures, but I believe I've answered and gotten the information I wanted you to know in the questions that were provided earlier on by Justice Crooks. So, again, I want to thank you for your consideration. This is an important project. I want to thank you for being enlightened here and allowing us to move forward in the electronic age. Thank you very much.
But we thank you and the committee for the extensive work and paying attention to the details. And as usual, when we do anything with CCAP, we run pilot programs, as all of you know, and then we deal with the problems that are issued in the pilot programs and attempt to correct them. And only after we have done that do we proceed further or attempt to proceed further. And I am assuming that was done in these two small claims pilot programs, and only on that basis is this petition before us, and that we are looking at it, and you're all nodding yes, so let the record show the response was yes. Now, so thank you, and of course always thanks to our CCAP people who also put on a very good program earlier. Our next, thanks, I got it here. We have an appearance by the clerk of Washington County, and this is one of the counties in which a pilot program was performed on small claims.
Good morning, Chief Justice Abrahamson and honorable members of the court. My name is Christine Dice. I'm the clerk of Circuit Court for Washington County. And I'm also the president of the Wisconsin Clerks of Circuit Court Association. I would like to thank you for allowing me to this opportunity this morning to address you on this very important issue. I thought I would start by letting you know that I am a person who embraces change, but I only embrace it after I have carefully studied the issue and given it serious consideration. That's what I did in 2005 after being approached by Jean Bosquet from CCAP to pilot the e-filing for the Wisconsin courts. We are here today to address the creation of a new rule implementing electronic filing. My hope is that you too will embrace change after careful study and serious consideration. My main objective today is to provide you with a clerk's perspective on e-filing. the good, the bad, and the ugly. In March of 2005, Washington County, as the initial pilot project county, accepted our first e-filed small claims case. The initial pilot project was very narrow in scope. It was limited to small claims money judgment cases, and we worked with one law firm. The idea was to keep it simple. Interim rules had been established by the Supreme Court dealing with electronic signatures, registration requirements, service, and filing fees. Late in 2005, Kenosha County also became a pilot county, and an additional law office was added to the pilot. The consensus of the staff on e-filing in both Washington County and Kenosha County is unanimous. The system is very user-friendly from our perspective. The ability of the system to automatically populate data from the initiating e-file documents into our case management system, as well as the capability of populating a return document from data we have entered into case management, is wonderful. We have found e-filing to be a time saver as data entry is reduced, as well as time spent in processing files. If parties choose not to participate electronically, we are able to scan their documents into our case management system, which thereby allows us to maintain the entire case in an electronic format. Since 2005, over 1,000 e-filed small claims money judgment cases have been opened in the two counties. We have had no problems with pleadings sent to the wrong place. We did not experience any problems with untimely filings, lost documents, or notices not being received. Neither county maintained a paper version of the e-files. No paper. Which brings us to another major challenge for the courts, dealing with the tons of paper produced by modern litigation. Clerks are constantly struggling with retention of court records. Counties spend huge dollars in storage of paper records, both on-site and off-site. Use of building space for this purpose is certainly not cost-effective. Simply stated, it makes sense to store that data online with access as simple as a point and click of a mouse, computer mouse. Easy access to electronic files is another benefit we have experienced. The civil clerk, the accounting supervisor, the judicial assistant, and the judge can all look at that information, have access to that electronic file at the same time. If staff receives a call, they can easily bring the case up and review all the documents on their computer monitor. They do not have to retrieve a paper file from the file room or from the judge's chambers in order to answer an inquiry.
Stace, I just want to interrupt you for one moment. So if I'm a circuit court judge sitting in Washington County and I wanted to look at the actual documents filed in that small claims action, which is on your pilot program, I can do that in my own computer.
Yes.
So my computer is like the public access computer.
That's correct.
So I, and if I want to, if I really want to print the entire file so I can take it home with me that night, I can do that.
Or you could put it on your jump drive and take it home and electronically put it in your computer at home.
That's what I was going to ask you. Okay.
Okay.
So for the judge and for the staff of the court on their computers, it's like a public access. But for people outside that public access, you only get the WCCA
correct.
Documents. Got it.
That's correct.
I understand that.
And actually, I'll go a little further on that. It isn't just small claims cases in Washington County. We have actually been scanning our files since 2005. We now, at the present time, scan all our civil, mm-hmm. family, paternity, criminal misdemeanor, criminal felony cases, as well as now all contested small claims cases. So basically, we have electronic files in our county now.
Through the scanning.
Yes, scanning that, capability.
I was going to ask you that, too. As I visited various counties, and I was at your county, and you told me that you were scanning, and any number of counties scan. And then I've been to other counties, and they can be small, and they can be large. Like, I could not detect any criteria that fit everything. They never scan, or almost never scan, because they don't have the staff to do it. So my question is, if we went into e-filing and we did have this scan, is it going to need, are we going to really be imposing more obligation for staffing in the clerk's office? And I assume that if that's true and the county doesn't want to do it, they'll just opt out. What
scanning
can you
tell goes me? Hand in hand with electronic filing. You have to have the capability to scan documents before you can ever consider
right.
E-filing.
And CCAP has put a scanner in every clerk's
yes.
office. There's no question about that.
If they've asked for one right. and they have the staff to do it, CCAP has supplied the equipment.
Right. So if you don't have the staff to scan, you'll just not go for electronic
and that's
filing
a potential
now.
Problem for some counties because of the cost involved and in dealing with counties and the issues between the state
you just
courts
opt out.
Sure.
I assume if 72 counties said tomorrow they want to do e-filing, can CCAP do that?
I'm sure CCAP can do anything.
Everything, right?
Right, Jean?
Sorry.
That's
I interrupted
fine.
You.
Not a problem.
Please proceed.
Thank you. If someone is at our counter and they want a copy, for example, of their final divorce judgment, with e-filing, the clerk does not have to spend time looking for that file. Once finding it, obviously with divorce cases, there's lots of post-judgment actions, so that divorce record is probably stuck in the middle of a stack of papers 2 or 3 inches thick. She removes it from that file. Probably has to remove staples, photocopies it, restaples it, puts it back in the file before she can finally present a copy to the person at the counter. In Washington County, with our public access terminals, the fact that we do scan almost all of our files, the person simply has to bring their file up at the public access terminal, click on the document they want, and click the print button. It automatically prints. At the receptionist counter, the person comes over, pays for their copy, and walks away. That's a huge savings in staff time right there for that one simple thing. In Kenosha County, Court Commissioner John Plaus hears initial returns of all small claims cases. He has a computer on his bench and uses the image documents to hear the case and make his determination. If a default judgment is entered, the clerk disposes of the case and CCAP electronically sends all paperwork to the law firm. Commissioner Plaus learned how to have all the cases up on his courtroom computer before court started. He was therefore able to move rapidly between the cases without taking the time to call them up from memory. He found it easy to move between each document in a file and determine if service was valid and how much was due the plaintiff. He felt it involved no more work than paging through a paper file. He also found it convenient to not have to move paper files around on the bench. Convenience, efficiency, cost savings, ease of use, all positive results of the e-filing pilot project. All positive results from the perspective of a clerk. I see no detrimental results to the public by implementation of e-filing. Pro se parties would have the option of filing electronically or by paper, which would then be scanned and saved electronically. There are obvious efficiencies and cost savings for attorneys. I believe litigants and attorneys will embrace e-filing and all it has to offer. However, having worked with judges for 28 years, I believe they will be the last ones on board with e-filing.
I want to know if this is the segue to the bad or the ugly. Which one is it?
It's just going to be a little bad.
Okay.
Last week, when I mentioned to one of my judges, who will remain nameless, that I would be here this week to address the e-filing petition. He indicated that he still wants a paper file in front of him on the bench. I'm realistic, as are all the clerks of court in Wisconsin. We know that some judges will embrace e-filing and others will insist on a paper file. Does this mean more work for us? Yes. Does it cut down on the cost savings? Yes. But we'll still have the ease of access, the efficiencies created when we open and process a case, less chance of data entry errors, the ability to quickly respond to inquiries, and the space to house staff rather than space to accommodate more paper files. There's a lot of good in the e-filing. There's a little bad. There's really nothing ugly about it. It is now time to move forward with electronic filing. We've run a successful pilot. We've seen the advantages, and certainly they outweigh any disadvantage that is out there. The next step is to create the court rule governing electronic filing and move forward. As the representative of the clerks of court of the state of Wisconsin, I respectfully request that you grant the petition before you and embrace the change we are proposing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dice. Justice Crooks.
Yeah, was there any opposition among the clerks? Any of the clerks that thought this was not a good idea?
I'm sure there are some out there, just as there are judges and lawyers who will not embrace change as readily as others. Some will have those limitations that we spoke of earlier, costs. They don't have the staff to do it. They don't have the resources to do it. This isn't something that's going to occur overnight. This is going to be a drawn-out process, but I think Wisconsin has always been a very progressive state. We need to start and push this forward, and as time goes on, more and more counties will come on board. More and more law offices will use it. The public will become much more savvy than they already are, and eventually it will be the thing of the future.
Are you anticipating doing any type of educational programs through the Clerks Association?
Definitely. Certainly.
May I ask, if I were required to file an answer with the court today, what time would I have to file it in Washington County?
Well, during the hours the office is open, which is between 8 and 4:30.
At 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
And if I came at 4:35, that would be late?
That's correct. You wouldn't be able to get in to file your answer.
All right. Now, suppose I want to e-file my answer.
You have the same time frame.
Same time frame.
Great. If it's 4:35, the answer will stay in a queue. And then when we come in to the office the next morning, we'll check the queue to see what has come in. It will be filed as of that day.
The second day.
The second day.
I'm sorry, the second?
Right.
If it's filed on.
It's the same way as if you were doing it with a physical office. The electronic answer would come. It comes to the computer, but the computer stores it. Computer says, oh, you can't do this yet. You got to wait until tomorrow because the office is closed. And then when we come in the morning, we look on our computer. Okay, your answer is there. We'll file it as of that day.
Let me make absolutely sure I understand. It is 4:15.
Okay.
And I'm at the computer, and I actually know how to do this. Okay. Now, am I going to get in immediately at 4:15?
You mean how long will it take to travel from your office to...
I mean, let's suppose a troop is out there sending something too, and I see several other people. We all have a 4:30 deadline, and we're all on the computer at 4:15. What happens?
Yeah, that's going to be a little too technical for me, Justice, to answer.
It would depend on your internet connection. If you had a fast internet connection, which most law firms do, most homes have cable modems or DSL, you're going to be able to complete that transaction within a minute or so. So then it would be file stamped that current business day. If you had a slow connection or you were having some kind of problems with your computer, it may be past 4:30. It might go to 4:35. But you would know that on your confirmation screen. It would tell you that we've received this document at this date and time, and you'd know immediately if you made that time or not.
It's like driving to Madison and getting stuck in traffic.
Right. Or the train on East Washington. You just don't know when it's going to be there.
Get there at 4:35. Tough luck. So don't send it at 4:15.
Okay. Good idea.
Now, let me ask the eminent clerk from Washington County. You said there's been no problem with pleadings sent the wrong place. How do you know that?
The attorney, most of those small claims cases were default judgment cases for the most part. They were if there were answers filed, they were filed pro se. When the pleadings come, there's always an acknowledgement that goes back electronically to the party sending it so that they know that it came.
You didn't have any complaints in the 1,000 cases.
No,
that's what
nothing,
you're saying.
Or
Kenosha didn't have any
right.
complaints. And if somebody types in the wrong address, that's another issue.
Right. And I think if they do make an error, that would be a cause for something not happening in a timely fashion. They always have the ability to come to the judge and ask for
an
order saying that, you know, that for cause this occurred, and yes, you can file your answer. It's still up to the court.
Let me ask this, Ms. Dice, and perhaps you're not the correct person to answer this. Maybe it's Ms. Vasquez or somebody else. Am I correct that with respect to e-filing in the federal system, that e-filing would take place at any time prior to, could take place any time prior to midnight of the day in question, and that it's not limited by a 4:30 or a 5 p.m. cutoff, but if you just file it on that date, that it would be accepted by the court?
I don't know the federal court's judgment.
Well, you can file it, if I understand our proposed system, you could file it at midnight.
Right.
You can file it. It's open 24 hours a day. The time for the filing will be, what time did you say you started? 6 o'clock? Oh, 8.
No, I understand the hours and how Washington County handles it, and I understand what I think is the proposal here. But what I think I'm asking is whether or not the federal court system handles it differently and allows for the filing to be any time that particular day. And I see Mr. Troupas is nodding his head yes. And so he understands where I'm going with the question. And my question is, if the federal system and if other courts do it differently, is there a reason why we're going to stay with the 4:30 or 5 p.m. deadline within the court system here?
There is a reason, and that's the facts rule. Mirrored the facts rule that
facts.
The court has created with respect to when a fax is deemed to be received. So it parallels that. Okay? It relates to the hours, open hours of the clerk's office. All right? So that's the answer.
Okay. It could be something else, but then you would want it for somebody slipping it under the door, too.
Right.
And somebody who faxed it.
Right.
Your theory is it should all be treated the same.
Right.
Coming in by any method.
Keeps it an even playing field for the pro se litigant or for someone who doesn't do e-filing. They're on the same, they have the same rules that apply.
Well, if I can ask Judge Patak before you walk away.
You're never going to get off there.
I understand it keeps it on the same playing field for the pro se or for those slipping it under the door, but it would seem to me that the federal court system has faced that problem and yet still accepts e-filing after hours as long as it's within the calendar day. And I understand the reasons that were just given as to why we're doing it differently here. I'm curious as to why the federal court system, in understanding that they have the same issues, has chosen to allow for e-filing to go through the extended time, and even though it's going to cut off the paper filing when their office is closed.
And I don't know the answer.
Right.
They just balance these factors differently.
I have, unless you have other questions.
No, I don't, but I do have a question for Judge Patak. And you can wait, let me, before I call you back, anyone else want to appear on this? Say anything? Mr. Troupas?
Because I'm here. Not the matter. But the federal system approached this question of the timing, because I was involved in some of that discussion when it was earlier done as president of the bar. The time doesn't change. So that if an item has to be filed at 4:30, it's filed at 4:30. If
why
you file at 4:35, then it's up to the litigant, just as it would be in any other proceeding, or up to the court, to determine on that particular case, based on the facts of that case.
When does the statute of limitations run on a Monday? 4:30 or midnight?
Well, you know, that's a legal question that Your Honors would answer. Whatever it does, it wouldn't change as a consequence of the electronic filing for the very reason Your Honor mentioned about someone like many of us waiting for the last possible moment to file something, and if we just blow it, well, you know, then you're going to have to come into court. You're going to have to beg forgiveness.
Okay. So the fact that it's open for filing at midnight does not mean that's an acceptable statute of limitations.
That's correct.
Okay.
And Magistrate Judge Crocker wrote a rather hilarious piece that's gotten a lot of publicity around the country about someone who objected to a filing that came in. They did a 12 o'clock rule, and it came in at 12:01 and 30 seconds. And he subsequently wrote an opinion that he wouldn't strike the pleading, but he would give the other, because the party, of course, moved to strike it because it was a minute and 30 seconds late, but he would give them 4 minutes the next time late so they could make up the difference.
Yeah, but of course, striking a pleading may not be a time factor. I mean, it may be contrary to the rule, but when you talk about a summons and complaint and a statute of limitations, you got a different kind of factor.
Exactly right. There are certain issues that come up, but I do think filing at any time by electronic is an excellent idea. If you file it late, you're still subject to the same rules as if I filed it late otherwise.
But just so we're all clear, in the federal system, the deadline for filing is not 4:30. The deadline for filing is midnight.
Has been moved as a consequence of rule changes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry, counsel. I just want to nail this, and it's not quite nailed in my mind. And that is, if the federal courthouse closes at 4:30, and it's the last day upon which you can file a particular document. Let's say it's a summons and complaint, statute of limitations.
If jurisdictional.
Jurisdictional. If it's filed at 7 p.m. that night, with the courthouse closing at 4:30, that may or may not be good enough. You don't know the
answer.
That's
correct, because a statute of limitations would be less, not a procedural rule, but a substantive rule of law. That would be the difference.
Right. It's like filing a brief here. I don't want to say this publicly online, is not jurisdictional if you're late. You might get us angry, but it's not jurisdictional. You don't file the petition for review timely, you're out of here.
That is
jurisdictional.
Exactly. And I think that you have those differences and alternatives available.
And that still may be a problem in federal court. That is, if you file a jurisdictional issue late, that will have to be decided.
I've not known that, but I assume that it would be.
Okay. All right. Is that nailed? All right. Is that nailed?
Well, I'm not sure it is. I mean,
I
was at a seminar.
I think we want different answers.
No, I just want to understand.
The reason I'm pressing the question is I was at a seminar put on by the ends of court recently, and my understanding as a result of the seminar was that on the last day of filing, as long as you got it in by midnight, it was accepted by the court. And it perhaps the information was incorrectly conveyed, but we get written materials on it as well, and I don't think it was.
I'm just merely speculating on the difference between the procedural and substantive, jurisdictional and otherwise, and I didn't mean to suggest that I knew that answer.
I don't practice in the federal court system, obviously, but I do know what was conveyed at the seminar that we were at, and it raises some questions about timing for filing and when it's acceptable and when it's not acceptable, and I understand that they're still working out bugs in their system as well.
I will say you know, as I said, as the former president of the Western District Bar, that we wrestled a lot with some of the things I've been hearing this morning, and simple is always better. You know, that ultimately is the question, and we wrestled with the same access to justice issues in our courthouse and how people will get those documents and, like, the very things that you're talking about. If the clerk there, if the court, you know, weighed in, but they're in the process now of making the last changes to that system to go entirely electronic here in the Western District. But as I said, simple was always better.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Troupas.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Troupas. Anyone else want to appear on this? Okay. Judge, do you want to wrap up? I'm not saying it's necessary, but I do want to raise one issue with you. This morning, the court got comment from the state public defender, and I don't know if you saw it, but the comment was that they take no position, formal position on the petition, but they point out that the system would result in significant increase in the workload, and therefore probably they would not voluntarily participate. And that, of course, is within their prerogative. But that the one thing that I wanted to raise with you is that if they did participate, they're asking that the electronic filing and usage fees, and in the demonstration that we saw this morning, there was a usage fee, $650, is it, at plus?
It's a percentage. That's okay. The credit card percentage
The
credit card company applies to the use of their system.
Right. So they are asking that it be waived for the SPD and other nonprofit entities. Sure.
Well, first of all, two things. One is affidavit of indigency for a filer would still be in effect. The other thing is, in a criminal matter, I don't think the public defender has to pay any fees to file anything now.
That's the other question I was going to say. What about the state? When the state files, do they pay a filing fee?
No, it's between state agencies. Here we get to that discussion, right?
But how does that fit with the $6 plus?
There would be no convenience fee for governmental agencies, as I understand our plan.
So
we're not going to charge the right hand's not going to charge the left hand to move money from one state budget to another to use.
So
the system.
No convenience fee, and since there's no filing fee for a state entity, we don't get into
that
issue. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
And I have
any other questions?
And I have nothing further to add. Thank you all.
All right. Thank you. That closes our hearing on 60607 on electronic signatures by court officials and 0608 on electronic filing in the circuit courts. And the court will take a short, very short recess and be out and reconvene as a court in open administrative conference, and we will start on these two matters and then move on from there. We're adjourned as a rules hearing.